Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
It's antiques.
For freaks.
For freaks. Like you.
And us. Mostly us, really.
Well, yeah.
What antiques should we talk about this week?
I wanted to talk a little bit about little old glassware company from America. I want to talk about Fostoria glass.
Fostoria.
Are you familiar with Fostoria glass?
It sounds prestigious.
It is. Interestingly enough, Fostoria got its name from a town in Ohio, which you wouldn't think would be that pretty.
Whoa, rude to Ohio, are we?
I'm sorry, listen, Ohio doesn't have many nicely named towns. So, like I suggested, Fostoria was an American glassware manufacturer that began in 1887, best known for their etched glassware, although it would be pressed, blown, and hand-molded over the years. Most commonly, it was needle-etched, which was a process in which a piece of glass was coated in wax, a design carefully carved out of the wax, and then dipped in hydrofluoric acid to etch the design into the glass.
I see.
Or it was wheel cut, with cut glass. This means a lot of what it sounds like on the tin, where you would take a wheel-shaped blade and hold the glass to it and cut away the unwanted pieces of glass, usually with some kind of debriding agent dripping down in liquid form from above. So, they landed in Fostoria, Ohio, although the founders of the company were from West Virginia. They came to Ohio because the land had been donated by the townsfolk. There was a huge cash incentive and a deep, deep discount on a recently acquired natural gas supply. Natural gas had just come onto the scene for manufacturing in a lot of ways. It was more dependable, more evenly heating, and everybody loved it. So when they discovered natural gas close to Fostoria, Ohio, they made a whole bunch of incentives to try to get companies to go do their manufacturing over there. And it worked great. Until 1891, when it didn't work great, because they had moved so many industries in so fast that the natural gas had been depleted in less than 10 years.
Oops.
At which point, Fostoria moved to Moundsville, West Virginia, which is a much more horrible name, and I'm glad they didn't change the name of the company to go with it.
I don't know. I kind of like Moundsville. It's growing on me.
Yeah, you would like the Moundsville elegant glass?
The city of Moundsville.
From Moundsville, Fostoria would go on to become the U.S.'s top producer of elegant glass. Elegant glass is a vague term used to describe any high-quality glassware that was partially handmade. It was very clean in finish and detail, and if it was in color, made with more vibrant colors than your standard glassware, especially depression glass. Elegant glass had its heyday from the 1920s through the 1950s to replace the use of fine china and imported crystal, so very much an upper-middle-class thing. Fostoria would go over to have well over 1,000 different patterns, including the American pattern, which was produced for well over 75 years and is the longest-running glass pattern in the U.S. of A.
Dang. Well done.
They also introduced the method of flashing in red, gold, and silver. There was a kind of Fostoria called wedding band, which was plain barware that had a silver band painted on the rim. I think it was in Mad Men, actually.
Most things were. Most of the antiques industry showed up in Mad Men at some point.
Which is annoying, because that Mad Men was a particular period of time. I will say, wedding ring was time appropriate for Mad Men. But yeah, they do. They do just kind of throw old stuff in Mad Men, don't they?
Well, it helps imply not only where a character and the society and the setting is now, but also where it has come from. Kind of like how certain characters have up-to-date dresses and fashion in Crimson Peak, whereas certain other characters are wearing fashions from 20 or 30 years before to imply where exactly their money is now.
Aha! Fostoria was, like, pretty much, like, the glass innovator of U.S. glassmaking. They pioneered a lot of different stuff. For example, they actually changed the way glass sold. A lot of firms would sell glassware through a sales representative who would represent those products and sell them to individual companies. Fostoria thought that this would cheapen their brand and created a closed system where they decided who they would sell their goods to and provided trained salesmen to sell the goods in the store. So Fostoria pioneered a really tight control over where the product ended up and who was selling it and how, which was really important to how they would end up developing their image and brand over time. come the 1930s, they would pretty much change the face of advertising with how aggressively they advertised their glassware.
I am a little bit reminded of the control Tye exerted over Beanie Baby sales and only allowing certain shops to stock them for fear that their image would be sullied.
It's really like that, yeah. And again, that was also like a huge innovation in that industry. That's not like toy companies just didn't do that before then. It's neat. One of the earliest patterns was introduced as Virginia in 1888. I bring this up just because it's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my goddamn life. After introducing Virginia, it was almost immediately copied by a rival company, despite being their very first patented design. And Fostoria immediately copied the copy and named the new pattern Captain Kidd to commemorate how it had been pirated. They stole it back.
Well done. Well
and then clowned
played.
On it. After the company moved to West Virginia, also in an interesting pirating case, the molds for the Victoria pattern was completely mysteriously lost. It was at some point gone, and the pattern was never made again.
Ooh.
The extremely well-known pattern America was introduced in 1915 and would be produced on all kinds of stemware and tableware until 1988. Now, if you're wondering, American is absolutely the pattern that Fostoria is best known for other than just the idea of fine-etched glassware. An American is the glassware that looks like it is made of little cubes. So it very much looks like if someone had made a bunch of glassware out of, who's the illusionist artist that I'm thinking of?
Are you thinking of M.C. Escher?
M.C. Escher is exactly who I'm thinking of.
So if M.C. Escher made glassware, it would be Fostoria?
It would probably be Fostoria's American pattern. It's also called block geometric for obvious reasons, or optical, in reference to its similarity to an optical illusion. At the time, there was nothing like American on the game. And it's probably contributed to how it became the most famous American glass pattern of all time. One trade magazine called the company making so many lines of glassware all so perfectly and markets its output so successfully to all classes of buyers that no name is better known to all classes of trade. Fostoria very famously is one of the few companies to both survive Prohibition, which was a big deal for glass companies that were making barware.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of glass companies folded after Prohibition because they couldn't adapt fast enough to the change in glass demand.
Damn.
Fostoria also survived the Great Depression without compromising the quality of their product and World War II without ever shutting down for production.
Damn, Fostoria.
Yeah. They were the first glass company to introduce complete dinner sets in crystalware in 1924, and after the aggressive campaign earlier referenced in terms of changing the face of advertising, which it absolutely did, it became a lead player in department stores forming bridal registries.
Oh. Gotta get that Fostoria.
Exactly. Fostoria marketed its sets, complete sets. No one had had crystalware sets before. And they'd market it so strongly with, like, this is what you get newlyweds. This is the gift for newlyweds. It's a whole set. They worked together with a lot of department stores to turn this, like, budding idea into the fully functioning bridal registry we know and hate today.
I personally like it because it makes it much easier to shop for people if they just tell me what the hell they want.
That is true. That's true.
I kind of wish everyone just kept a personal gift registry that I could access.
I have one on Amazon if you're interested.
We'll be linking to it on our Facebook.
Do you want to guess how much of it is plush hyenas?
Is it most?
It's mostly plush hyenas. Fostoria would also provide glassware to multiple presidential establishments. Eventually, they actually earned the reputation as being, like, the glass company for commemorative glassware for presidents.
Sorry, I commemorative antiques and collectibles boggle my mind in general, but, like, God help me, if we get more Woodrow Wilson merch, I'm not sure if I can handle it.
We're not going to be talking about Woodrow Wilson, but we will actually be unburying a familiar name.
Oh no.
So the names I could find specifically. Apparently this trend ended at Nixon, but included Reagan, Nixon, Eisenhower, and Lyndon B. Johnson.
Are you just jealous because, like, they're horning in on your Lyndon B. Johnson memorabilia turf?
Yeah, a little. It's really bizarre. I would have mentioned different presidents this fall. And also, yes, now I do have to go out and become the owner of Lyndon B. Johnson's personal Fostoria collection, yes.
You don't, though. You can just not.
I'm going to buy every part of Lyndon B. Johnson until I own his spirit in a little snow globe.
I think at this point you already do, you just don't know it, and you don't realize that his spirit haunting you is what's driving you to collect all of his memorabilia.
You think that, much like my other Lyndon B. Johnson memorabilia, I purchased and forgot his spirit?
Yeah. That honestly seems like the most rational explanation.
So, I was so excited when you brought up Woodrow Wilson, because it's like, no, I have another president that you don't want to talk about anymore.
Oh, God.
By the 1950s, at their peak with over 1,000 employees and over 10,000 different products, things would chug on down for Fostoria. Actually, it was because of automation. Fostoria held so tight to their history of partially handmade, finely crafted glass that they didn't even think about investing in automation until the 1970s. And of course, most companies had fully embraced the Industrial Revolution Part 2 by now, which is what I'm going to call the automation of the 1960s. And after they introduced their automation so much later, it freaked out all of the glass unions, and there were massive labor strikes, costing them many of their employees. By 1980, Fostoria had stopped turning a profit entirely, and was bought by Lancaster Colony Corp in 1983, only to be shuttered by Lancaster in 1986. Selling many of the molds, including, of course, American, Baroque, and the coin pattern, to various other glassmakers. So that's the story about how Fostoria could survive everything except for the labor movement. So the problem with Fostoria is that they were the biggest glass manufacturer in the U.S. So there are lots and lots and lots, and I did say 10,000 different products at one point, so I cannot break down things in a great way. I really am going to talk a lot about American pattern, because it is the Fostoria piece. It is what people recognize. It is one of the most sought after. I have a lot to say about that. Fostoria used color very sparingly. In general, colors are more valuable than clear. There are a couple of variations to this depending on pattern, but like, as a general rule, any colored piece of Fostoria is going to be worth more than the crystalware. Of course, certain colors can be more valuable, and actually some of them can be used to date specific patterns, like within 5 years, which is really neat. The colors they introduced were also pretty limited. They had green, amber, blue, and canary in 1924, orchid in 1927, rose, also known as dawn, and azure in 1928, because glass companies have to be infuriating, and regal blue, empire green, and burgundy in 1933. Getting familiar with these colors can really help you tell Fostoria apart from a lot of the mimics that would come later. Color, especially in glass, is really hard to nail down, so there's always differences. So as soon as you get to know what colors were common for her Fostoria, you can rule out other popular lookalikes. In general, looking up for the early American pressed glass, EAPG, those are really valuable. The forms that had emphasis on like the form of the mold, and they didn't have any etching. Etching had become Fostoria's thing for a couple years. And these are really old, especially the Charles Beam designs. I was delighted to find out. He did basically hen on nests, but with all sorts of other animals. They're all pressed glass, and they're all extremely rare. You can also keep an eye out for whole sets. I don't think many of us will be lucky to see that in our lifetimes. Or unusual shapes, just things that didn't have a really long run. Some of those are parlor lamps, the early stationary sets, hurricane lamps, mustard jars, ink wells, and hairpin boxes, as well as something called a molasses can.
Sure.
If you know anything about molasses cans, let me know, because that's the first time I heard that phrase.
Email us, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Like I said, the American pattern is absolutely the best known Fostoria pattern, possibly in the world. However, since it was made well into the 1980s and Fostoria had a hilarious and well-documented issue with pirating, there are a lot of misleading pieces. So, how can you tell if it's a piece of Fostoria American and not, well, Indiana Glass Company's Whitehall pattern?
You can't. The end.
You can. I have all the secrets here for you.
Oh, a twist.
A twist? Ah, you thought I was going to go tell you to go screw. The secret tends to lie in the quality. Fostoria was one of the highest quality glass producers of all time, and the cubes are sharper, higher quality, better relief, fewer straw marks and bubbles, as well as just sort of plain old having different angles. If you're not a geometry major, though, this is going to be tough. So, what about some normal tips? Colored pieces, for American, tend to be very strongly tilted in the direction of Whitehall or cube. Cube was Jeanette Glass's ape of American. And so Fostoria pieces were extremely rare. If you see one in any color other than azure blue, canary, and light green, it is almost certainly Whitehall or cube. Jeanette specifically, their handles are sharp and like almost 90 degree angles and come to a point. In general, Jeanette, I think, is easier to tell apart because the Jeanette cubes were almost always in colors, and particularly colors that Fostoria had never had. Whitehall is trickier. Whitehall was made as a direct competition to American, but they fucked up, and I got their number. The absolute best way to do is the blacklight test. Whitehall, under blacklight, does not glow. Fostoria, up until about the 1970s, will glow with a very pale yellow. It is a very distinct pale yellow. Once you see it, you can kind of tell it out of a crowd. Because a lot of old glass glows colors under blacklight, just because of chemicals in it. The next thing to look for is clarity. Fostoria fire polished all of their pieces to a perfect smoothness, especially the American pattern. Whitehall did not. So when you run your finger over the cubes on Whitehall, you can feel a rough, wavy surface. Because it was cheaper to not fire polish things. This can also be checked with, like, kind of flashing a light through it like you would to check any kind of glass clarity. Fostoria, you will get more perfect clarity than Whitehall. You can check that bottom! All of the American pieces have a specifically ground flat bottom foot, if it is a footed piece, such as a bowl, plate, vase, so on, so forth. You can also check that handle. This is my favorite tip. I use this one all the time. Fostoria handles attach at the very top of the piece. Whitehall handles attach an inch down. This is like the easiest visual trick to tell them apart. You can get feet pics.
No. No, you can't.
I put that in just so that you would hate to hear it.
You know, truly we are the best of friends.
We are truly, you are truly my best friend because I antagonize you on purpose with my words.
Why?
What I mean by that is that if it, the piece has feet, so like kind of certain nut dishes and bowls will have little legs for decorative reasons, the foot shapes are really important. American has flat vertical sides with a slightly S-shaped front and back. I know that that sounds like almost insane to try to like conjure up, just look up a piece and you'll see what I mean. Whitehall feet are just tapered octagons, so you can actually just process of elimination this one. You might not know what slightly S-shaped flat vertical sides looks like. You do know what an octagon looks like.
It's got 8 sides, like a stop sign.
8 glorious angles. That's an old meme.
Is it?
I think so. I think it's like 10 years old now. Real American has curves. Any vertically oriented piece of American Fostoria, which is to say tall glass, vases, so on and so forth, they should have a curved profile with a slight flare towards the top. Whitehall, almost always straight sides, no flare. And you can get into some seamy business by looking at the seams. An American piece should have 3 or more. Thank you. Half of my research was just trying to make that joke work.
Months of preparation for that moment.
That one moment. An American piece should have 3 seams or more because the shapes are complex. Like we were just saying about the curved profile and the flare, you need more pieces to get that kind of shape. I have written here that Whitehall is a loser with only 2 seams. Whitehall almost never has more than 2 seams. Again, because Whitehall had pretty straight sides, they didn't have to have more than 2 seams. And, you know, combining all those tips, you can have a pretty strong grasp on telling these things apart visually without having to use a black light or, you know, looking specifically at the subtle S-shaped curve. I do know some people who will double check by comparing the way the cubes stack and are shaped. That's insane. It doesn't have to be like that. Another Fostoria really commonly ripped off is coin glass. I do not, unfortunately, have quite such a delightfully rich breakdown of ways to tell it apart, but I got some tips. You can pay attention to color. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you may be picking up that color in glass becomes important. The original Fostoria coin pattern is a colonial revival pattern from the 1950s. It features architectural ridges and little indentations pressed in that look like illustrated coins. And this is actually an important point to determining its authenticity. Fossoria coin glass did not use actual coins for the coin motif, although ripoffs later would.
Oh.
Yeah. If the motif is an actual coin, that's not Fossoria. Fossoria had little hand-carved medallions that illustrated a whole bunch of different subjects. It was frequently patriotic. We are looking at the 1950s, after all. But they weren't real coins. The coins on the original Fossoria were also always frosted. Later on, Indiana glass, which you may notice has become sort of the arch nemesis of Fossoria, would do a very similar pattern, and the coins would be unfrosted. This should be a no-brainer, but then with the advent of at-home acid etching, they could be easily frosted over and passed off as original Fossoria. However, these are easy to tell. Acid etching, especially like current acid etching plus like sandblasting, if you have access to that, they all destroy the detail. So if it looks blurry, there's a good chance someone messed with it. Coin motifs on Fossoria coin are sharp. You can read them. You can tell what they are. And they are frosted. If they are frosted and you can no longer make out what it is, I would be extremely suspicious. Not to mention current methods of frosting, whether it be acid etching or sandblasting, are really rough. Fossoria, of course, used hydrofluoric acid, which is very delicate, provides a very smooth kind of sheen, and they finished pieces, so it's just going to be a rough versus smooth situation.
Gotcha.
You can also compare colors. Old Fossoria coin was made amber, blue, clear, green, olive green, and red. Reproductions are clear, green, blue, and red, but the green is a darker, uglier green, and the blue is a pale blue, whereas the original blue is a deep sky blue. Obviously, that's going to be kind of hard to get the hang of. You can look up pictures, though. I would stick with other more obvious methods and then get down to the nitty-gritty when you can't use those anymore. In general, if you're trying to tell new cut glass from old cut glass, look at what happens to the parts that get cut. This is one of my favorite little factoids. A new cut glass is made with diamond wheels, and it completely skips the smoothing step in traditional wheel cutting, which is like an iron or a stone wheel with a kind of liquid debridement being dripped down on it. The liquid debridement is part of the smoothing, but with diamond wheels, they don't do that, and making a second step to smooth it makes reproductions no longer financially viable because it's a lot of work. So if you just look at the cuts and you see an unbroken parallel ridge across the length of the cut, that's new.
I see. Very clever.
Yeah, I have seen these in person. They are actually pretty easy to see with the naked eye. A loop is, of course, very much more helpful to determining and make sure you're not just seeing a cut. But like I said, the old cut glass was polished. Another point is, especially on like cups and used like things that were meant to be used, like punch bowls, if you can picture a cut glass in your head, you know how a lot of it comes to points, right?
Right.
If you touch it and it's sharp and painful to hold, that is new, because the people making it for use knew that they went on hands and smoothed down the teeth on purpose. Usually painstakingly long process. But the reproductions are made to sit on a shelf, so it doesn't matter if they cut your hands. And that is my talk on Fossoria and how they really screwed the pooch on staying alive as a business despite beating almost insurmountable odds earlier.
Truly incredible.
Before sources, I just wanted to impart a couple of reference guides that I found really helpful that you can look into for really, 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 really in-depth information. Fossoria American 2056 is specifically a website dedicated specifically to the American pattern, and for $24 you can get an extremely exhaustive comparison guide between Whitehall and American. I didn't get it, but like I said, if you are rabid about Fossoria, it's a great read. Antiquesprices.com has an exhaustive price guide, and OurHouseAntiques.com has a great breakdown of all kinds of different Fossoria etching patterns and what colors and certain shapes and the patterns mean for their age. As for sources, thesprucecrafts.com, Fossoria Glass History and Patterns, collectorsweekly.com, glassware/Fossoria Glass, depressionelegantglass.com, their guide to identifying Fossoria glass patterns, realarepro.com, Fossoria coin glass, ecommercebytes.com, their article on Fossoria, fossoriaglass.org, the whole website, rpastimes.com, identified depression glass styles.
If you would like to show us your Fossoria glass, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you liked how many different kinds of glass we talked about today, consider scrolling on down where you're listening to this podcast and leaving us a review. 10 out of 10, clear as glass, or 0 out of 10, I hate glass. I break it when I see it.
0 out of 10, that movie was terrible.
Oh. It was, by the way. I don't want to ruin anything for anyone, but it was a bad movie. I watched it in good faith. It was bad.
I'm so sorry. If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, bonus episodes covering the Penny Dreadful Varney the Vampire, or watch live drag readings of A Gentleman's Guide to Dressing with Economy, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
And let me tell you, that alone is worth the price of admission.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening. Bye.
Bye.